The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Larkin, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals, or at least the virtual Court of Appeals, this January 26th panel. We have three matters on our oral argument calendar today, the first being in the matter of Michael Hine. Counsel, just so that you are aware, we are recording this only by audio and not by video, even though we can see each other now. And what that means for you is please state your name as you begin each leg of your argument so that we can keep track on the audio recording of it, who's presenting which. And because we're operating through technology, there are occasional glitches. So if you have a difficult time hearing or seeing anyone, or it appears that anyone is frozen, just bring it to our attention and we'll pause the proceedings and try to get the technology sorted out. With that, each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument, with an additional 5 minutes to use for the relator if you choose to do so for rebuttal. Whenever you're ready to proceed, counsel, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Stephanie Ballmer, and I represent the relator, Michael Hine. The issue before the court is whether a respondent, the state of Minnesota, deed may consider only Mr. Hine's employment with Moose Lodge in determining his eligibility for pandemic unemployment assistance benefits. Our position is that respondent must consider both of Mr. Hine's jobs with Wisconsin Central, which was a railroad position, as well as Moose Lodge, which was a part-time position, in making that determination. We're asking the court to find that Mr. Hine was ineligible for state unemployment benefits as a result of his employment with both Wisconsin Central and Moose Lodge, and so is therefore eligible for pandemic unemployment assistance benefits. It should be undisputed Mr. Hine is both eligible and ineligible for Minnesota unemployment benefits. Mr. Hine had two different jobs during the relevant time period. As the record reflects, he was found ineligible for state unemployment benefits due to his employment with the railroad, and he was found eligible with respect to his part-time job with Moose Lodge, and then the eligible unemployment account did not go through because of excess earnings. None of those facts are disputed. Now, the real issue here is whether respondent can consider Mr. Hine's employment in a vacuum, one way or the other. Respondent claims that Mr. Hine's employment situation as a whole was considered, but has not explained why it chose his part-time work instead of his full-time work as the controlling factor in its eligibility determination. Not only was there no explanation, but there is no legal support for that narrow interpretation that does contradict the underlying policy of the CARES Act. Respondent erroneously stated in its brief that Mr. Hine was not eligible for regular unemployment benefits because of his railroad employment. Now, as the record reflects, at page 3 of the June 21st, 2021 unemployment law judge decision, which is at document 5 of the record, the ULJ did find that Mr. Hine's employment with Wisconsin Central, the railroad, was non-covered employment, and that non-covered employment is not eligible for state unemployment benefits. That determination went unappealed. So it should be, again, undisputed that Mr. Hine was not eligible for regular state unemployment benefits based upon his employment with Wisconsin Central. With respect to the CARES Act, which is why we're here today, our position is that the CARES Act is very clear about who is and who is not eligible. A covered individual is someone who, quote, is not eligible for regular compensation or extended benefits under state or federal law. We do not dispute that Mr. Hine's only employment were with the Moose Lodge, that he would not qualify for pandemic uninsurance assistance. But because he had this other job, which rendered him ineligible, our position is that the determination on eligibility was incorrect. Respondent is asking the court to apply the disaster unemployment assistance guidance automatically As the court found previously in the Muse decision in the matter of Muse, which was a February 22nd, 2021 decision, the regulations governing DUA or disaster unemployment assistance apply to the PUA, Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, only in the event of questions concerning coverage or administration that are not otherwise covered in the CARES Act. And our position is that the CARES Act very clearly covers the coverage issue that we're here today discussing. And so the court specifically stated in Muse, if the individual's eligibility for regular UI unemployment insurance is questionable, then the state must first require the individual to file the regular UI initial claim and then go down. And if there are still questions, then we look to the DUA. Our position is that the DUA does not apply. Similarly, we agree with respondent that there is no guidance on this particular issue in the unemployment insurance program letters, but our position is also that that is not necessary. Now, to the extent that respondent is asking this court to accept a much more convoluted argument about looking to the DUA regulations for guidance, then our position is that respondent is also acknowledging the CARES Act's ambiguity. And our position is that not only would the CARES Act be considered ambiguous for us to look to the DUA, but so too is the DUA also ambiguous. And if these laws are ambiguous, then the court should look to the CARES Act's legislative history. And the legislative history of the CARES Act, as the court stated in the Muse case, is that the PUA program extended economic assistance to people who lost work due to the pandemic, but would not be eligible for regular unemployment compensation benefits. That is Mr. Hine. There's no dispute that he lost his railroad job because of the pandemic. There's no dispute that he was ineligible for regular unemployment compensation benefits based upon the loss of that job. And as the court also stated in Muse, PUA is a benefit of last resort for anyone who does not qualify for other unemployment compensation programs and who would be able and available to work, but for one or more of the COVID-19 related reasons listed in the CARES Act.
But your client is eligible for unemployment benefits. At least he has the requisite time from the Moose Lake employment. So I'm trying to understand the last argument you made.
Yes. Our position is that he is both eligible and ineligible. What respondent has done is considered only the Moose Lodge employment.
Okay, go ahead.
And so our position is that the intent of the CARES Act was to cover all these people who would not otherwise be covered by state unemployment benefits. Gig workers, independent contractors, partially employed people like Mr. Hine.
There's nothing in the legislation that distinguishes between a single employment or a multiple employment or a part-time employment or a full-time employment?
Correct.
So you're saying since there's nothing in there, it is ambiguous as it relates to your client's situation?
I'm not claiming that it's ambiguous. I'm claiming that it's straightforward. To the extent that
I thought you just argued that it was ambiguous and therefore you should look at legislative history.
What I was saying was that if the court accepts respondent's position that the CARES Act does not speak for itself and that we then need to look to these other regulations in the Disaster Unemployment Assistance Act, then we should look to the legislative history.
But your claim, you're not advancing the claim of ambiguity. You're saying that it is not ambiguous and that it is, we should go to the plain meaning of the words.
Correct, Your Honor.
Trace that down in an outline form, can you?
Yes, Your Honor.
Which words have plain meaning that get to the result that you want?
Yes, Your Honor. The CARES Act states that a covered individual is someone who is not eligible for regular compensation or extended benefits under state or federal law.
Okay, let me stop you there for a moment. And you're claiming that your client was not eligible.
Correct.
Even though he had the requisite number of don't know what you call it, hours or
credits.
Credits.
Your Honor, and, he was. Oh, sorry.
And had established an account. And as I understand it here, but for the fact that his income was too high, he would have been, he would have received state unemployment compensation. Is that correct?
If the respondent was allowed to consider only his Moose Lodge employment, yes, that is correct. So what I'm saying, though, is I agree that he was found ineligible based only on the Moose Lodge job. But, Your Honor, he was also found, eligible, but he was also found ineligible. So to the extent that the CARES Act says a covered individual is someone who is not eligible for regular compensation, then we look to this June 2021 decision. No.
So where was the ineligibility determination?
At page 3 of the June 2021 decision, document 5.
What's the factual scenario? What made him ineligible?
The unemployment law judge stated that Hines' employment with Wisconsin Central is non-covered employment because it is instead covered under the Federal Railroad Unemployment Insurance Act. Non-covered employment is not eligible for state unemployment benefits.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just have a couple more comments.
So do we have a situation here where you're claiming is he was covered by reason of the railroad employment, but not the Moose Lake employment? Is that it?
Essentially, Your Honor, he did not qualify for unemployment benefits under the railroad system either.
And that made him ineligible?
His employment with the railroad, because of their separate system, automatically made him ineligible, yes.
Okay. And then based upon that ineligibility, he becomes a covered individual. Is that
correct,
your
opinion? Yes, Your Honor. The last two points I'd like to make, again, goes back to this Muse decision.
Let me go back to that argument again. In terms of the definition of covered individuals not eligible for regular compensation or extended benefits under state or federal law, is he eligible for anything under the Railroad Retirement Act?
No, he was found ineligible.
Okay. Why was that?
He didn't have enough credits under that system either.
Okay, all right. So you're claiming that he was not eligible under the railroad employment?
Correct.
And that makes him a covered individual under the PUA benefits?
Yes, Your
definition.
Honor. Yes.
No, but he is eligible under Minnesota. The Moose Lake employment.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you have one partial eligibility and partial ineligibility.
Yes.
And your argument is that, and there's nothing in the CARES Act that describes what happens in that situation, and therefore it's ambiguous, and therefore we should look at legislative history. Is that your argument? Am I following it now?
Essentially, Your Honor, I don't necessarily agree that it's ambiguous, but to the extent that there isn't any guidance.
Well, if it isn't ambiguous, we don't get to look at legislative history, do we?
Correct.
So I gathered if you want us to look at legislative history, you've got to keep the argument that it's ambiguous.
I can see where there would be ambiguity, Your Honor, yes.
Is this a case of first impression where we have this particular arrangement of employment and eligibility and ineligibility?
I believe so, Your Honor. I certainly defer to Ms. Phillips on that, but to the extent that respondent referenced a number of other situations in their responsive brief without any citation, I think we have to assume so. The only the final point that I wanted to make to the court here is that, well, and it goes back to this legislative history. I'm not going to belabor the point, but I think it's very clear that the purpose of the CARES Act was to deliver economic assistance to people exactly like Mr. Hine. And unless the court has any additional questions, that's all I have.
Thank you. Just to push back a little, I mean, isn't it more accurate to say that the CARES Act was designed to cover people that are ineligible, broadly speaking, not eligible in one arena and ineligible in another?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think, again, to the extent that there could be ambiguity, there certainly should be guidance on this issue. But I believe that if the Department of Labor did issue guidance, it would explain why Mr. Hine should be covered by PUA.
Well, but if he's eligible in one arena but not another, doesn't that remove him from the apparent intent of the legislation?
No, because he is also ineligible. If you look at it in a vacuum, then he would not be eligible for PUA. If you look at it as a whole, he's both eligible and ineligible. And then we look to the legislative intent. And I think that results in payment of benefits to him.
Okay, well, if there are no further questions from the panel members, we'll move on. And you'll have 5 additional minutes for rebuttal if you'd like it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondent.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Carrie Phillips, and I represent Respondent Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED for short. So this is an unfortunate set of circumstances where the relator falls through the cracks of several unemployment insurance programs.
Can you address the outlined argument that was just made by the relator? That
yes,
he was ineligible for one piece of employment, but eligible on the other. And therefore, at least to some extent, he was ineligible or not eligible, and therefore he should be considered covered.
Yes. So the unemployment insurance program looks at an applicant's employment situation as a whole. I wish it plainly said that in the statute, but you kind of have to look to how it works. And an example,
well, if you look at it as a whole, you've got partial covered and partial non-covered, right?
Well, if you look at it as a whole, I mean, he is eligible for state unemployment benefits the way that the CARES Act directs us to look at.
But he's ineligible by reason of his major employment, the railroad.
That's true. And it does result in a situation
what supports your rationale of just picking one of them and ignoring the other? I think that's the argument the relator is making.
Sure. So to be eligible for PUA, a requirement is you cannot be eligible for regular unemployment benefits. So that sets it up there. If you're eligible for regular unemployment benefits, you can't be eligible for PUA. He is eligible for regular unemployment benefits based on that part-time employment.
But not eligible for a reason of the big employment that he had, which was the railroad.
Yes. And let me just say this. The railroad employment doesn't make him ineligible. He just can't use those wage credits to establish an account or create a higher WBA. It doesn't make him ineligible, however.
I thought the regulator said that there was a finding that the ULJ made that the railroad made him ineligible.
Yeah, and I understand. I think her wording was something like that. And I'm just trying to be accurate in terms of how the statute.
So are you saying the ULJ was wrong in that determination?
I would say the wording is not right.
Well, how's that different than, is that right or wrong? What is it?
Well, I would say it's a little wrong because the railroad employment does not make him ineligible.
So did you appeal from that determination?
Well, we agree with the outcome, and the outcome is he is eligible for state unemployment benefits.
But that determination that the ULJ made as to the railroad benefits, you didn't appeal from what you think now is maybe an incorrect state
I don't believe it's an incorrect statement. I'm just making a distinction between using the wage credits to create an account versus the railroad employment making him ineligible for state unemployment benefits, because he is eligible for state unemployment benefits.
What words would you use to reconcile the concern that you've raised that the ULJ used the wrong language but reached the right result and effectively should have said something else other than ineligible?
Well, I think a more precise way of saying it would be he cannot use his railroad wages to establish an account. But she is correct that he is able to establish a state benefit account because he does have enough wage credits. And the statute doesn't parse between employment. It doesn't parse between jobs. It doesn't say he's ineligible on this, but he's eligible on this.
Can you refer us to any case law that allows you to agree with the result and disagree with how the result was obtained and not have to challenge how the result was obtained with, you know, because what you have here is a situation where the ULJ decided something and you didn't take an appeal from it. So my question is, are you stuck with that?
Well,
explain it away as you've done?
I may have misspoke because I agree with the ULJ's decision.
Determination about being ineligible.
I agree that he is eligible for state unemployment benefits, and he cannot use his railroad wages in his account. And I believe that's what the decision says. But she did use the words he is ineligible based on the railroad employment. And I'm just trying to draw that distinction because I think it muddies things. If he had just had railroad employment and he had no part-time job, he would be ineligible for state unemployment benefits because he wouldn't have the wage credits to establish an account. So I think it's a shortcut way of speaking to say he's ineligible.
What you're saying is if you're eligible anywhere, if you have multiple employments and you're eligible for any one of those, that makes you ineligible for PU.
Yes.
PUA.
Yes, that is what I'm saying. If you're eligible to establish a state benefit account based on a part-time
job, on the other hand, since there's nothing in the Act that specifically says that, is there a sufficient ambiguity? That allows us to engage in some kind of interpretation of the language.
I don't believe it's ambiguous. The language is, you have to be not eligible for state compensation. He is eligible for state compensation, but for his earnings, and that's addressed in the regulations. And the regulations here is kind of the key to this case because it specifically states, if the reason you are ineligible is because of earnings, you're considered eligible for state unemployment benefits. So we have to look at that regulation in determining whether he's eligible.
So that you're saying that even if there's some kind of ambiguity here, you believe that regulation covers that ambiguity and that's what ULJ is entitled to look at and that's what we should look at as opposed to some general legislative history.
I don't believe it's ambiguous. I believe that the application of the language, the plain language, is that because he is eligible for state unemployment benefits, he is not eligible for PUA. That's just a plain language analysis. I don't believe it's ambiguous. As far as, the argument,
although the statute does use it in the opposite, does refer to it in the opposite. If ineligible for state benefits. And in this case, Ms. Ballmer's arguing that there's a designation of ineligibility. So it almost feels like a glass is half full, glass is half empty. How do you the wording of the statute is an issue. Assume for the sake of argument that we were to find an ambiguity, does D then lose?
I don't believe so. So if the court accepts the interpretation that you look at the, you know, that he would be ineligible based on the railroad, but eligible based on the part-time, I mean, how would Deed implement that? Deed would have to ignore the part-time wages, remove them from his base period, or would Deed be issuing two benefits? Would Deed be required to issue him regular state unemployment benefits on the part-time and then PUA on the railroad? If he had other employment, would Deed be required to, you know, implement a third program? There's nothing in the law that says Deed issues these eligibility determines based on specific discrete jobs. It all sets up a system where
let's suppose for a moment that he worked at four different places.
Okay.
And he would be ineligible on some and eligible on not, and the reverse on others. What if it's two and two or three and one? If there's any kind of,
so if he's eligible for state unemployment benefits for
if
any
there were
of those
four
positions,
and he was eligible on one.
Yes. So if
that would make
four,
him, that would make him ineligible under your interpretation for the CARES Act.
Yes. If he's eligible for state unemployment benefits on any of those jobs, that means he's eligible for state unemployment benefits.
You don't think that's an absurd result?
It's not absurd. In this situation, I admit that it seems unfair. And that's kind of where this
That's what we talked about, absurd result. Can we reasonably conclude that Congress intended that result?
Well, I will draw your attention to the Mixed Earners Unemployment Compensation Act, which we kind of referenced towards the end of our brief. And it was created to address situations like this for self-employed people. So when the PUA program was rolled out, there was this group of people like Relator who had like a part-time job in covered employment, but most of their income in self-employment. And they were being put on standard benefit accounts because they qualified, but it was at a much lower benefit amount. And so in the mixed earners, we're called MUC for short, what Congress did was say, okay, if you have the self-employment, we're going to give you an extra $100 a month to kind of compensate for the fact that they're on this lower benefit amount based on their covered employment, and they're not getting this benefit that people on PUA were getting who were able to get that higher amount based on their self-employment. So Congress did recognize kind of an unfairness that became apparent when the program rolled out.
But the Congress saw it. It's clear that Congress saw it and tried to offer some mitigation for it. But is there any mitigation here? Is there anything similar in this statutory scheme that would allow for the part-time versus full-time disparity not to result in a complete unfairness?
And there's not. And that is unfortunate. And all I can say is PUA is not a perfect program. It doesn't take into account, many kinds of equities. People aren't treated equitably. And here I can see why this does seem unfair, that he has this lower benefit.
If Congress addressed the unfairness in one area, does that show what its legislative intent was, that it didn't want it to be an unfair result?
Perhaps, yeah. I'm not familiar with the legislative history. I'm assuming that it was enacted
the legislation itself recognized that Congress didn't want to allow for some unfairness, and so it remedied it. It just didn't remedy it in this situation.
That's our interpretation of why Congress enacted the MUC program, because we saw this happening to a group of people, and then Congress came out with the MUC program, which did address that somewhat. But as you say, not for everybody.
But only in a minimal fashion, you're saying.
Yeah.
Even in that case, it wasn't as if it was an attempt to be apples to apples for what would have been received if the self-employment would have been traditional employment.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. It does seem like an unfair result, but that's the result of the statute. Deed can't make, issue different program eligibility determinations based on different employment, because a lot of people have many jobs in their base period. They have, there's people who have 15 jobs in their base period. And the way the unemployment insurance program works is it looks at all of that as a whole. I would just point out, under 268.069, it lists, different kind of requirements. You have to be able to establish an account. You can't be ineligible on a separation. You have to meet ongoing.
Would you address what the state's position is on this court's role in addressing what we may perceive to be an unfairness in the result of a statutory scheme?
Sure. So I believe the court has to apply the statute and the regulations as they're written. I believe it's an issue for the legislature. The issue of unfairness is an issue for lawmakers to deal with, like they did with the MUC program. Under the statute, Deed can't make an equitable determination. Deed has to apply the law. And I believe the court also has to ensure that Deed is applying the law correctly, that the findings are supported by evidence. Here, the findings aren't disputed, and that the ULJ properly applied the statute and the regulation. Here, the ULJ had to apply the regulation, and it all kind of comes down to that. If it wasn't for this regulation, the outcome might be different, but the CARES Act directs us to look at the regulations, and the regulation here says he's eligible, he's considered, I believe is the language, eligible for state unemployment benefits, and so therefore he's ineligible for PUA. My time is up. If there's no more questions.
Yes, your time is up. Judge Klopach or Judge Larkin, any further questions?
No.
All right. Relator, any, thank you. I'm sorry, Judge Larkin, I didn't see your hand.
No, I have a question for Relator.
Oh, okay.
When she begins. Just want to get in line.
Brace yourself then.
Noted.
All right. Any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. And again, just for the recording purposes, my name is Stephanie Ballmer and I represent Mr. Hein. I just have 3 points to make. The first, with respect to counsel's distinction between legal impact of Mr. Hein's railroad employment on his eligibility for state benefits, the court's clearly aware of the ULJ finding that he was ineligible for state benefits. My point is, even if we disregard that language, he was still found ineligible due to lack of credits. He was found ineligible due to lack of credits with the federal railroad unemployment system as well. So our position is that the distinction is arbitrary and that he was found ineligible for the state unemployment benefits. Next, with respect to what Deed can and cannot do,
Can I pause you for a minute?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor.
I believe we just had some communication from your client.
Yes.
If you could, Mr. Hein, I gather you're in the room, so as not to boot you out of the Zoom proceeding, just be aware if this were a live courtroom, of course, no one would be able to stand and give statements other than counsel. So just so you're aware, we're going to disregard whatever your communication is in the chat room, and I'll ask you not to engage further. I appreciate your concern about the outcome of the case, but I hope you realize that we're limited to the arguments of the lawyers at this point. Thank you. Ms. Ballmer, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Our position is that there are things Deed can do in this very situation in light of its acknowledgement that this is an unfair situation. The initial judge did make the right call in this situation and Deed appealed it. And so our position is that there is plain language here that allows for the delivery of the appropriate benefits to people like Mr. Hein. And then finally, we do agree that that the CARES Act is silent on this distinction between partial employment or this job and the other job. But the UIPL Unemployment Insurance Program Letter 16-20 that respondent referenced in their briefs specifically states on page 2 that covered individuals also include self-employed, those seeking part-time employment, individuals lacking sufficient work history, and those who otherwise do not qualify for regular unemployment compensation. And so again, I think if we look at what was trying to be accomplished here, it's pretty overwhelming that everybody should have been trying to get these benefits to Mr. Hine. That's all I had by way of rebuttal, Judge.
You mentioned, yes. By way of fairness, everyone should have been trying to get the benefits to Mr. Hine. But just so we're clear, do you take a different position than Dee does with regard to this court's role in trying to remedy what we might think is an unfairness if it turns out that we think the statutory language would direct a different outcome?
Our position is that the statutory language provides the court what it needs for a straightforward application to the facts at hand. We're not asking the court for an equitable remedy here. Our position is that the CARES Act very clearly allows for the delivery of benefits to Mr. Hine based on his ineligibility for state unemployment benefits.
Thank you. I'm not sure if Judge Larkin got to ask her question. She wanted to.
She didn't, yeah.
It might be a nice way to sum this up because it is rather complicated. Counsel, could you just as succinctly as possible tell us what you want to hold and how it will impact your client's receipt of benefits?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm asking the court to find that Mr. Hine was ineligible for state unemployment benefits and therefore is eligible for PUA benefits.
Okay. And the theory of eligibility is even though he's technically eligible, he's really not eligible because he can't get any payments because he was making more than he would have received in payments.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Just wanted to make it as simple as possible as we leave the hearing. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all I have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to both counsel.